welcome to this week's episode of Not D&D, brought to you by EM World Live. I am your host, Jessica, and this week we have Chris here to talk to us about Lethe. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, first thing I'm going to say is congratulations, because the game has successfully funded on Crowdfunder. I know you're still accepting new backers, so if people see this and are interested, they can go and click through, but you have met your goal, so it is happening. So congratulations, that must be exciting.
It is. We also managed to hit all of the stretch goals we had listed, which was nice. I really wanted all of those, the additional writers working on the project. I really wanted them to be able to do what they had proposed.
That's great. I'm so pleased you've got the funding for that. So it's definitely going to happen. So the main topic today, of course, we're talking about Lethe, and we will get into that into a bit. But as always, I'm going to talk a little bit about you as the creator first before we dive into that. So I wanted to talk about your background with tabletop RPGs. So the classic question I always ask people is, do you remember the first tabletop RPG you played?
That depends. Kind of an interesting question. When I was young, I had actually ended up with several.
Yeah.
But I never actually played, and I never quite understood because I never saw anybody play it.
You had all the books and you like read them? Is that?
I read several of them. There was, I remember there was a DC Super Heroes one I had, and there was like a Civil War one. These were things my brother had given me that he found at like a thrift store.
Sure.
But we never played, and I never had anybody, I never saw what it was like. Mm-hmm. So I never quite got the concept.
Right.
Until, like, you know, years later, and I heard about actually the One Shot podcast, and I heard that, and I listened to that, and I went, "Oh, this all makes sense now.
I understand how
this all works." And first time I played was D&D.
Classic.
A friend of mine wanted to run it, and didn't really jive with them as like a GM, so but kind of took a break from it. Wasn't sure if like playing was for me, if I just liked the concept.
Yeah.
And then I started running for some people, and it all kind of just spiraled from there. And like, I think the year after that, I released my first game on itch. It kind of just went real rapid fire from there.
Yeah, definitely. So do you always prefer being a GM to being a player across all systems, or do you think that was just a D&D thing? Or
no, I think that's kind of the way I like doing it.
Amazing.
And I kind of built this into Lethe a little. So describing like how to build the system and how to kind of make it work with your players. I always describe it to like my partner and other people as like there's a machine running, and I'm just kind of putting new inputs into the machine. Like the world is just there and it exists.
Yeah.
And whatever you do, that's just putting more inputs in and adjusting how the machine works. So they can ask me a question and I'll be like, give me a second. Okay. This is what that would be. This is what happens from that moment, you know.
Yeah.
Or like they'll say, oh, what happens over in this city? Is there any kind of what kind of clothing do they wear is something I've been asked before, and I'll be like, okay, here's why, and I'll because it's all just kind of running in the background.
I
like that.
Amazing. Yeah, I tend to do the lazy GM thing of if I haven't made a decision about the world and they say, what kind of clothing are they wearing? I go, that's a really great question. What are they wearing? Just make the player come up with it.
I do that too. I like having the input from the players. Especially if it's something that is not something that exists at all at that point, and I'll be like, okay, so let's go from there. Kind of yes anding a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I love that you kind of started with role-playing games, as because we all know that collecting TTRPG games and playing them are two separate hobbies, like by the stack of, this is my unplayed stack here. so we all know they're two separate hobbies. So I love that you started with the first part of the hobby of collecting, sounds like quite cool games by the sounds of it, and then later coming to be a player and then jumping straight into being a creator. So I think that's really awesome that you kind of jumped straight in and went on there. How did you start when you first decided, okay, I want to share some things I'm created? Like, what was, so if somebody's similar to you, really enjoying running, has ideas for creating games, but doesn't know where to start. Where did you start?
The best place to start is something small. You don't mm-hmm. want to start with a complete, like, you don't want to, nobody just goes and makes something the size of, like, you know, D&D or Pathfinder yeah. or any, you know, these yeah, big yeah. books. Nobody makes anything like that right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually started because I liked a lot of smaller stuff, like mm-hmm. Lasers and Feelings or yeah. Honey Heist or these one page RPGs. I really like that. I actually have, my degree is in art, and I was very much okay. a minimalist going yeah. through school. So I that kind of speaks to me, paring mm-hmm. it down to something mm-hmm. that small. So there is a one page RPG game jam. It's a big one mm-hmm. every summer. Yeah. And that's actually what got me to do it, because I saw there was a one page jam starting, and it was like the second year it was running. And I went, you know what? Let's make something.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it just, I went, okay. And I started thinking, like, what do I want to do? And then just kind of built from there. Yeah. Because my background in art, I tend to start with, like, what do I want the players to experience?
Mm-hmm.
So the first one I released is called Totally Real Human Adults. It's about a bunch of animals in a trench coat yeah. Pretending to be a human.
Yeah.
And it, the thing is that it comes off, it's very slapstick. It's very absurd. But when I started, I went, okay, let's talk about imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Because I was dealing with that a lot of the time. I was like, all mm-hmm. right, let's talk about that. And so I started, and I worked that into, like, the core of the system. So yeah. that tends to be the approach I take, but that's not how everybody approaches stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with something small like that, like where you can really kind of play and have not have to worry about filling in all of the gaps and just kind of yeah. trusting that some of that's going to get filled in by the players and by the GM as it goes is really a great way to start.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea as well. And also, speaking a bit to imposter syndrome, I love the, because you have an art background, you've probably heard this, I love the make bad art thing, where mm-hmm. it's because sometimes you can get so worried about making the perfect thing, you end up not making anything. So sometimes yes. you have to go and be like, I'm going to make something and it's not going to be good, but it's going to exist and it's going to be there. And I think sometimes for your first tabletop RPGs, it has to be the same. You're like, you know, I've got to start and I've got to make something. And I know it's, like you say, it's not going to be Pathfinder. It's not going to be D&D or Blaze in the Dark or anything that, you know, but I'm going to yeah. have made a game. And sometimes that's kind of enough. So I think that's a great place to start from.
Yeah. And that's, yeah. And anybody that's writing this, when you start writing, I can also say to that end, also just write. Like, mm-hmm. don't worry about trying to get it down perfectly as you write it. Mm-hmm. Just start putting stuff down. I will find that if I am stuck, if I just start doing stuff, just start mm-hmm. writing out whatever I'm thinking about for that,
mm-hmm.
it kind of starts to come together. And I will go back and remove most of what I wrote, but I will get into the flow then. And you get into yeah. a good stride.
I love that. So I love that advice. Okay, so that's great for getting started. But you've put out a few games now, and so Lethe mm-hmm. is your kind of latest game we're talking about. And so let's lean into it the way you talked about the way you create games. So what did you want players to feel when playing Lethe?
So the basic concept behind Lethe, I know, is not like a particularly unique one. I think everybody that runs games or writes games has had the thought at one point of starting off with that's what I'm looking for here, kind of an amnesiac kind of background. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of, well, what if, you know, the players don't know who they are starting mm-hmm. off, and so they don't know what they're going to be playing.
Mm-hmm.
Because not a lot of systems are built for that, it's never never seems to quite work out. It takes a lot of readdressing. And it's one of those ideas that's just been kind of sitting at the back of my head for a couple of years now. And then everything just kind of clicked for me last year on it. And so I started just building out from there. And again, like, because of the way I approach stuff, I tend to need some sort of other feeling and other reasoning behind it in order for my brain to really kind of latch onto it.
Yeah.
And for this one, it is primarily about trying to remember the exact phrasing I use on the site and everything for it, but it is primarily about not just discovering who you are, but deciding how much you want your past to affect your future.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just, this is, you know, who I was. There's mechanics in the game that allow you to transition from this is who I was, but that's not me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this particular memory as part of me.
Yeah.
I don't think that should affect me the way that it currently is. So I'm going to reject it and I'm going to change some of my character sheet based on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting because I was chatting, anyone knows I'm obsessed with the Baldur's Gate video game at the moment. And I was describing this to my partner. I was like, oh, what interview are you doing today? And I said, it's kind of like in Baldur's Gate 3 when you're playing the Dark Urge, where you start not knowing anything about yourself and then you'll discover it. And then with that discovery, you're going to need to decide what you want to do with that information. So that was how I described, I know in tone, not technically the same, but the concept of, I don't know who I am, and we're going to explore that. And what does that mean? But yeah,
I do really like that analogy. It's because you can play it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing about this, it is very GM heavy. That is one of the things that, unfortunately, there's really not a lot of ways around that.
Sure.
Because the GM has to build all the characters.
Yeah.
They have to build the setting.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to, use one of the settings that we've had or build a new one, but kind of build out the progression and everything. It, gets to, there's a lot of prep involved.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, if the GM knows that the player would potentially like the idea of playing a character with a redemption arc like that, like something like playing Dark Urge, but then becoming good, they could totally build that in because they know that the player is going to expect that, but they may have darker memories. They may have things that they don't like. And so they're more apt to reject it in order to transition from that, which one of the mechanics that I introduced to kind of make that work so that the player, it's not just, well, here's what you're playing. Good luck, is a survey beforehand as part of it, which is another part of it being kind of GM heavy.
Yeah.
The GM gives the players a survey with more kind of like personality vibe based questions than something like, you know, are you strong or things like that. It's like, what's your go-to coffee order? If you could be a fruit, if your character was a type of fruit, what would it be?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So it's more, so you can kind of get an idea of like painting a picture of a person without specifics.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of get like, oh, they're going to be a little bit, they want to play this character a little more fun, or they want to play this character a little more serious. And you can then adjust their character sheet and their memories to kind of suit that.
Yeah. I suppose that's also an opportunity to do safety tools as well, because when you're asking that to get an idea of what they want, you can also do whatever safety tools you use at your table. Like, hey, are there any themes you don't want to have in the game or do want to have in the game? Like, I suppose doing that in advance lets you make sure that you're not going to do something that accidentally ruins someone's day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Safety tools are a very important part of this. It's something that you're playing with enough themes in the game that it can get fairly intense.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how you've got it set up, and if you aren't using safety tools, it can get a little, you run some risks. So it's a really good idea to do something like Lines and Veils, the X card, doing like the checklist beforehand, that kind of thing.
Okay, great. So this game does need a session zero in advance. Obviously, it doesn't have to be people meeting up, but there needs to be that form and that checklist written in for about the characters. And is this designed to be like a one-shot or would it be a campaign play? Or what did you have in mind when you're making it?
It works really well as like a duet type of thing as a one-shot, because then you have more opportunities for a single person to be unlocking their memories. So each character is going to start off with about 5 memories that they're going to unlock. Yeah.
Okay.
On the character sheet here. So you have these several memories that you're going to unlock, and they're kind of treated like leveling up. And when a player gets to a point, you know, they unlock a memory.
Mm-hmm.
At any point after that, they can choose to either accept or reject it and take those, either the bonuses to their stats or improvements on their skills, or they can replace things if they reject it. And so it's kind of treated like a level up system when you get
Cool.
But it's a expendable point that you can kind of deploy whenever. So if it's thematically important, you know, middle of a big confrontation or something, you can go, I'm going to accept that this is part of me, and then take the bonuses that might help you get past the thing you're doing. But when you are... sorry, just trying to get my words in order here. As you are unlocking these memories, if you have like 5 memories with, let's say, 4 players, that's a lot of flashbacks and events that are happening, because it's not going to be like, oh, you go to, you know, everybody, you know, you open a door and then, oh, you get a memory. You want something a little more tied into it. And if you only have one person that's actually playing, it's a lot easier to get through all of the memories, kind of tell the story that you're both trying to tell there in that amount of time. If you have multiple people, it works really well as like a little kind of mini campaign. Somewhere between like 3 to 10 sessions would work real well. In the playtests I've done, we've done a few memories per session, at least like one per person per session. So over time, you know, it'd probably take 4 to 5 sessions to finish out that particular set.
Okay.
So, but a single player or a duet, I've had a few people actually playtest for single player and have kind of figured, like, just to try and see if they could do it. And I need to get in touch with them, because they seem to, there's some good ideas from other creators that are like, hey, you can make this work. But for like a shorter thing, less people, more people, it's going to end up just being longer.
Sure. No, that makes sense. And as a note, I just wanted to say that the game is in development at the moment, obviously. So everything we're talking about today is where the game is kind of currently. And as we know, in playtesting, things will jump and change. So anyone listening will know that's the case. But jumping into the game a bit, and also, so what happens when we sit down to play? Like, what's the core kind of mechanics in the game? How do we play?
Well, every player basically starts with a blank character sheet. The only things that they know going in are their character name and their kind of changing the wording here, but typically, like, basically their health, which is also kind of used as a, it's stamina is what we have been calling it lately. Just because it is also sort of a resource that you can expend. And that's it. You know nothing else. Your main stats, you have to actually perform actions that are similar that would classify as that stat in order to find out how much you have in that.
Okay.
When you do make a roll, you are going to roll a number of dice equal to that particular stat.
Okay.
And the difficulty of the roll is actually how many successes you get on those dice. So if you have a stat of 3 in agility, you would roll 3d6. And if 2 of them are above a 4, so 5 or 6 is a success, anything less is a failure, you would have 2 successes. So if you roll like a 5, a 6, and a 1, you have 2 successes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the success, if the difficulty of the test is a 1 for like a really simple one, you pass with flying colors, no problem. If you end up having, if the difficulty is like a 3, you don't succeed. There are ways you can kind of negate that a little. You can spend your stamina. You can spend a point of stamina to make one of the dice a success.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you can, I got 2, but I need that extra one. I'm not going to risk it. I'm going to spend that extra bit of stamina and I'm going to succeed.
Okay.
There are also your skills, which are unlocked in a very similar way. You have to do something somewhat similar to whatever the skill is in order for it to be unlocked. So it's it's easier for the players to kind of figure out what their stats are initially, but they don't know what their skills are going to be. So that kind of comes up a little more naturally.
So I'd imagine like if we were playing and I can see the stats are grouped under physical, mental, and social. So say I was doing a social one, I was like, oh, I'm going to try and talk our way into this room. So you might be like, okay, that's charm. You get to roll this many dice for charm because that's how many you have. And I'd be like, great. And I'll probably write that down so I know. Right. But maybe if I had a skill and you're like, also, you happen to have a skill that's,
you know, a smooth talker, I think is one of the ones I have listed in the rules so far.
Exactly. And I'd be like, so I can write that down as well.
Yes, you'd have smooth talker. Mm-hmm. And then what that would do is allow you to increase the number. Instead of adding like an extra die or something like that, it allows you to increase the numbers you have rolled by 1. So effectively, anything a 4 or higher becomes a success.
Okay.
So it becomes easier to get the successes if you start leaning into the things you're more skilled at.
Yeah. Okay, great. That makes sense. So the stats is a D6 dice pool situation, and skills kind of give you a plus success for the level of it.
Right. It adds it's a modifier to the actual dice roll, basically.
Yeah. I also noticed there's abilities on the sheet as well. How do they interact with gameplay?
They are a little bit more, the skills are something you want to use as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Kind of lean into that so that you can get these successes easier.
Sure.
Abilities are, the game's kind of broken down into scenes where individual like sets of challenges and dice rolls to get past a certain area. And the abilities, you can only use each ability once per scene. So you only end up with 2 abilities, and they are a much bigger effect. So some of them are, I can actually take a quick look at this. Some of them are stuff like the player may reroll any failures once when attempting to determine the intent of another living thing.
Oh, okay.
You must use the new rolls. It allows you to do like rerolls. It allows you to add other dice. It allows you to make massive modifications or add additional effects, that sort of thing. So they're much more valuable, but more limited use.
Yeah. Okay, great. And you mentioned memories as well that will be given to us throughout the game over the course of different sessions, and we may choose to accept those to get boosts and abilities when we're doing certain roles. So that all kind of makes sense for the character sheet I'm seeing there. But how do we, as you mentioned, it's quite prep heavy for the GM sort of game. How do we structure a session? So if I'm running a game of this, I know I'm going to need to give out memories to people. So I'll kind of have maybe some ideas of how I'm going to do that. But you mentioned like scenes. So what's the structure of a session?
So structure of a session would be like you'd start off with everybody not having their memories, starting to kind of figure out what they can do. And that starts off in like a scene. So it kind of is like a little nesting set of things. So there's the scene, which is the overall structure of like a particular area. So like, for example, if one of the playtests we did, the players came up to a barn in a field. That the entire interacting with the barn, they interact with the scarecrow out in front. That is still part of the same scene. They move into the barn, still part of the same scene. They find a way out of the barn that leads into the ground and out to another location entirely. That ends the scene and transitions into the next one.
Okay.
Inside that scene, interacting with the scarecrow is the challenge, trying to figure out what they want to get from the scarecrow, what they're trying to find out, how they're going to interact. That all is the challenge of that. And so each scene has multiple challenges, a few in the barn, a few outside the barn. And within each challenge, there's a set number of tests that you have to complete. So those are the dice rolls. So somebody, you know, there may only be one, or you may have to get to where they want. They may end up having to make five or six rolls, depending. And all of the, you know, each, the scenes are all like inside of the session. So it's like, just keeps breaking down into like to like just individual dice rolls.
Okay, awesome. And we mentioned, I'm guessing with this system, it's flexible enough that you could use kind of whatever setting you want and create your own world and characters as you like. But you mentioned that you're providing some settings and characters within the game. So could you, is it possible for you to share some of those with us without, without too many spoilers? Because I'm aware people listening might want to play and
it's, I won't go into too much on the kind of what the core of the main setting is. For some people, it may not come as too much of a shock given the general nature of the game and everything, but, it took a lot of inspiration from stuff like, Over the Garden Wall and, similarly, stuff like, The Divine Comedy. The actual name of it. So like this kind of like weird, Alice in Wonderland type of thing. Like you're going from these different weird areas. Like I said, in the barn instance, the characters open up a stairwell, and when they get out the bottom of the stairwell, they are at a little like tiny shack in the middle of the woods after that. Like, so they're going down into the ground, but then they end up above ground, no barn nearby. The field is nowhere nearby. So it's just kind of weird, dreamlike setting. And there's a lot in there about how to kind of customize that to what you're doing. And one of the things we did with the crowdfunder was the stretch goals were for other creators in the space that I talked to about creating settings for the game. So one of them is kind of like a Fae realm type of thing. There's a post-apocalyptic, almost Matrix-inspired setting. And then there's kind of traditional cyberpunk setting that someone pitched that is that like recovering memory chips and things like that. So not quite sure how to describe the other one that Logan did, because that one, without giving too much away, we have some descriptions of that up on the site, actually.
Okay.
I really love what they pitched on that. And so we're going to actually have all those and pre-written game, like several sessions with like four characters. And I'm trying to make that as setting agnostic as possible. So you could use any of these or kind of build your own with it.
Yeah.
And those are all going to be in kind of a separate book with this. So if you if you go to back it or pre-order it now, since it's already done funding, there will be a second book that you get with it that'll have these additional rules and the additional like campaign and settings and things like that. Not necessary to play the game, but really good supplement to have with it.
I think definitely. I think the first time I'd run this game, I would love that guidance and structure from it to play it through with an existing setting and character sheets, just to give me the feel of it. And then, like you say, then use it as a tool set to kind of create your own worlds and things that you want to have in it. So I think it's really super useful to have those settings and kind of that guidance to get you started. On the note of that guidance, what kind of guidance would you give to new GMs that are going to run this game for the first time? Like, do you have any advice if somebody was approaching running this for a table?
If you're running it and you're not going to use like the pre-written thing, where you have something to kind of build off of, I think some of the biggest advice I would have is one of my favorite bits of advice for any game: be a fan of your players. Don't lean into any kind of the adversarial, oh, I gotcha kind of thing. Like, have fun telling the story with your friends, and allow yourself to make changes as you go. Course correct. Don't lean too heavily into, well, this is where this is going. Because if they haven't discovered it yet, it doesn't technically exist. So if you realize, hey, this memory that I have for them is not going to work well or anything, just change it before you give it to them. Don't worry too much about, well, this is where it's going.
Yeah.
Be willing and flexible to adapt as you go through it. And because I tend to be more of a, not quite a sandbox GM, but you know, the gif you see a lot of people use of like Wallace and Gromit with Gromit putting the tracks down as the train's running. It's like, no, okay, I see where they're going here. I can place this in front of them and they get to choose which way they're going. And, but past that one little piece in front of them, who knows what's there?
Dominoes will fall. That's great advice. I think that's great advice for this game, but actually I think that was just good advice for generally running games as well. So thank you very much for that. And coming to the end of my kind of questions, talking about Lethe, do you have any other kind of things you want to make sure we talk about or any closing thoughts on it?
Trying to think. I think the only other thing I might want to mention about it is it is not very GM, like I said, it takes a lot from a GM. So I'm going to say it's GM friendly, but it is very new player friendly.
Okay. Yeah.
I actually unintentionally, as one of the playtests, ran it for a friend that I didn't realize had never played a tabletop game before.
Oh, wow.
And I could not tell when they were playing. They were very good at it. And they, found out after the fact that, oh, yeah, that was their first time playing. I'm like, okay, I got to run you something that's not quite as heavy. Like, well. But it so far has seemed like a very good way to get, if you're looking for something to introduce someone, mm-hmm. to it. The mechanics are not that complicated, and they don't have to go through the, you know, it's not an hour long process to make a character.
Yeah.
It is a very user-friendly thing from the player's perspective.
Yeah. Because I imagine you can teach it as you go to players, because you can say, you're going to start with a blank character sheet, so just tell me what you want to do, and I'll tell you what to do as we go. So yeah. I imagine you can even approach it that way with players. So yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. So if you're somebody that runs a lot of games and you're trying to hook new people into the hobby, maybe this could be the one. but yeah, if anyone's listening to this and they do think it sounds interesting, it is still up on Crowdfunder. So the link is up on the screen or in the show notes of the podcast that you're listening to. Because the best way to support indie tabletop RPG creators is to buy their stuff. But yeah, Chris, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about Lethe and your general ideas about kind of game design. I have another question for you before you go, which I ask everyone, which is, do you have any other games that you would like to recommend? And the rules are, it can't be a game that you've made, and of course it cannot be D&D.
I think about this because I've been reading through it lately. I think the one I might recommend right now is actually, and I'm probably going to butcher the name of this, Fabula Ultima.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Which I didn't quite realize how the character creation in that was when I first started looking at it. And I really love the way the character creation works because it is like forced multi-classing.
Yeah.
You start off with, you have to pick like five levels between two different classes. And it, stuff like that. Like I impose a lot of stuff like that in my games. I'll tell people like, okay, you have to have a negative stat. You like beforehand, you have to pick something you're not good at.
Yeah.
So that there's not, it kind of forces people to lean into things. And I really like the way that it's kind of built to do that mechanically from the beginning. In a real like intuitive way. So I haven't run it yet, but I've been reading it and I really like the way it's structured.
Nice. I mean, I also have that game and I have not played it or read it yet. So it's not good to hear somebody saying good things about it, because maybe I'll have to get off my pile of doom to the right of me that is now almost taller than me sitting down. Yes. All right. Well, that brings us up to the end of our time. So Chris, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so pleased to hear that Lethe was fully funded and you hit all of your stretch goals. And I'm really excited to see the final version of it when development is finished.
Yeah. And that should be sometime this summer is when we're expecting it to come out. I don't have a set date or anything, but that's kind of what we're aiming for.
Perfect. Perfect to know. Great. All right. Thanks very much, Chris. I think that's all for this week. And thank you for everyone that watched and listened. That's all for this week. Thanks a lot. Bye.